Hello, I'm Christy Robinson, a technical principal at the ISB, and I'm joined by Amy Bannister, an assistant technical manager. Today in this webcast, we are going to discuss the ISB's exposure draft on the Disclosure Initiative's proposed amendments to IS1. Now, I would note that the exposure draft also includes a proposed amendment to the guidance on implementing IS1 arising from the presentation of items of other comprehensive income arising from equity accounting investments. We will not be discussing those proposals today, but will instead concentrate on the proposals coming from the Disclosure Initiative itself. So if I move to slide two, just before we start, there are a few housekeeping matters for you to bear in mind, and these are summarised on this slide. There are two points we would particularly like to draw to your attention. First, about questions. I think this webcast is meant to go for about 30 minutes, and we propose to maybe present for about 15 of those. So later, after that presentation, we will be answering questions that you submit to us. We may get more questions than we can answer at this time, in the time available, in which case we will try to address the main themes that we think will be of interest to most people. You can submit a question at any time during the webcast. Just type your question in the text box on your screen and click submit. And secondly, and especially when we are answering questions later, please remember that the views that are expressed during this webcast are our own. They are not necessarily shared by the board members or other staff of the ISB. The official position of the ISB is explained in the exposure draft of the proposals that were published in March. So if I move on to slide three, and just to go through what we're going to cover today, firstly, I'll give you a bit of background of how we started the Disclosure Initiative and ultimately how we've arrived at some of these, well, these amendments to IS1. I'll then give you an overview of the Disclosure Initiative, and then we'll move into the specific proposals in the amendments to IS1 project. And then we'll go through the specific amendments, so the order of the notes, subtotals, materiality, line items, and accounting policies. And as I said, we'll then leave some time for questions. So if I move to slide four, this slide gives you a bit of background as to how the journey for the Disclosure Initiative started. And it arose, I suppose, initially at the agenda consultation in 2011, where the ISB got a strong message that a disclosure framework is needed to ensure that information disclosed is more relevant to investors and to reduce the burden on preparers. Now, that led us to take two courses of action. Firstly, we decided to work on formulating some concepts around disclosures and presentation in our conceptual framework project. We also felt there was room to investigate how disclosures could be improved within the existing IFRS framework. So in order to explore that later point, we set up a discussion forum where we brought together participants from representing all those in the financial reporting process, so users, regulators, auditors, preparers, and standard setters. And we held that forum in January 2013. And prior to that, we also initiated a survey to get some information about what people thought was the disclosure problem, and then based on that, we would try and develop some messages or some ways forward. I think in terms of what we heard about what the problem was, I think the main message to take away was that it was not just one problem, and people saw the disclosure problem differently. So, for example, I think it could be characterised as both disclosure overload, but also not disclosure of the right type of information, so not enough relevant information. It's also, it was highlighted that part of the disclosure problem is about communication, and that all these three aspects contribute to the disclosure problem, and depending often on who you were, whether you were a user or a preparer, you might see that problem differently. Anyway, what we heard at that discussion forum and also what the work we had been doing on the conceptual framework, I think really brought together how we thought we would move forward with the disclosure initiative, and that ended up being summarised in a feedback statement that we developed on the forum. And that really set out the sort of the overview and the way forward on the disclosures and basically set the boundary for the disclosure initiative. So if I move to slide five, this slide gives you an overview of what the disclosure initiative is. And I suppose it's not like normal projects that we see, because it's actually a broad initiative based on or made up of a number of different projects. And I think those projects we've split between those which we see as ongoing activities, those that we see are in their implementation phase, and the amendments to IS1 are part of that, and those where we see as still in the research phase. Now, I'll give a bit of overview of each, of where we're at with each of those projects, except for IS1, which I will then hand over to Amy, and she'll take you through some of the, or through the proposals in the exposure draft. So in terms of ongoing activities, last year the ISB made a strategic decision regarding its IFRS taxonomy and XBRL activities. That group and those activities are now forming part of the disclosure initiative. I think that has two sort of direct consequences. One is that digital reporting and the IFRS taxonomy are now seen as integral to the ISB's standard setting process. And a more practical point, we are seeing a lot of sort of cross discussion and input between those with a digital way of thinking and putting that sort of thought process into the way that we develop standards and think about disclosure requirements. So we're actually utilising sort of their skills a lot as we think about, say, the principles of disclosure project. We're also thinking and working towards developing, I suppose, an internal best practice guide or a protocol around the way that we write disclosures. And that activity is definitely still in its very early stages and to some extent is going to be informed by one of the research projects, which is, I suppose, at the other end of this picture of the disclosure initiative, which is the review of the existing standards. So at the moment we're undertaking an analysis or review of our current disclosure requirements to understand where and how we might be able to remove inconsistencies, where problems are being caused at the moment in terms of disclosures, and how we might sort of learn from that in the way that we write new disclosures, and also how we might address them in some of the other research projects, in particular the Principles of Disclosure project. So if I move to the Principles of Disclosure project, because I've just been speaking about that, that's another sort of research project. We're expecting, hoping to get a DP in 2015, and actually we're trying to bring that earlier into 2015 rather than later, but we're working with timelines and sort of topics and scope to understand exactly what timeline we can meet there. That really is looking to replace IS 1, 7 and 8 with, or at least the disclosure requirements in those standards, with a set of principles that could be applied not only by preparers of using IFRS, but also the ISB when setting standards. So there's a lot of interaction in developing those principles and that guidance that we develop at a standards level, interaction with the conceptual framework team, who are also sort of trying to set the high-level principles from a conceptual basis. The other research project we have there is on materiality, and we heard, I think, in the discussion forum and the survey that one of the key issues that are causing the problems with disclosure and perhaps are seen as a possible way to resolve the problems with disclosure is materiality. In that project, we are currently undertaking quite extensive research into how the term materiality is used, and that's across jurisdictions, across accounting guidance, so different local GAAPs, and as well as, say, any case law or regulatory guidance on materiality. And we think bringing that together and being providing a clearer picture about what materiality means could be very useful and powerful. It's sort of our view that often when people talk about materiality, they mean different things. And I think shining a light on what that what the term really means in different circumstances could sort of aid sort of better discussions on materiality. In terms of what we think we will do with that work, we want to bring a paper to the board in September. We, at the moment, staff think that that could form the basis of a research paper that we could publish. We also think it will form the basis of a decision to be made by the board whether they want to provide any further guidance on materiality. Just in terms of implementation, I'll do this quickly. The other one outstanding is the reconciliation of liabilities from financing activities. So that's changes in debt, and this responds to a number of requests from users that they wanted greater information about debt and the changes in debt, and in particular net debt reconciliation. We're just at the moment investigating some illustrative examples or some development or something that we could put in IS7 that might meet those demands, and we're testing that with some both preparers and users, and expect to take a paper to the board in July. So I think that gives you an overview of the disclosure initiative. I think at this point I will hand over to Amy, who's going to give you some specific details on the amendments to IS1 project. Thank you, Amy.
Great. Thanks, Christy. So moving on to slide 6, this gives an overview of the amendments to IS1 project. As Christy just pointed out, it's one of the implementation projects forming the disclosure initiative. So the ISB published an exposure draft in March 2014 containing proposals for narrow focus and clarifying amendments to IS1 to remove perceived barriers for judgments. I think each of the amendments is relatively small, but the cumulative effect could be greater, leading to improved financial reporting. So the comment letter deadline for this exposure draft ends on the 23rd of July, and the ISB will be restarting deliberations in Q3 of this year. Moving on to slide 7 and one of the specific amendments proposed in the exposure draft, which is about the order of the notes. So IS1 specifies a normal order for the notes to the financial statements, and that normal order is a statement of compliance, a summary of significant accounting policies, supporting information for information in the primary financial statements in the order of those line items, and then other disclosures. And what we'd heard is that some have interpreted that normal order as being the only order that the notes can be in, and that the notes cannot be varied. And we'd heard from some investors that they can't see how these disclosures are related. So the amendment proposed is to clarify that entities do have flexibility for ordering the notes to the financial statements, that that order should be systematic, and that understandability and comparability should be considered when deciding on that order. And we think the potential impact is that the related disclosures can be combined, for example, the accounting policy and the related note disclosure together, and also that notes can be ordered by the importance to the entity. Moving on to slide 8, the next of the specific amendments, which is about subtotals in the statements of comprehensive income and financial position. So IFRS specifies few subtotals for presentation in those statements, and we'd heard that entities want to present additional subtotals, but they're discouraged from doing so. So when the ISB discussed this, they proposed that IS1 is clear that an entity is required to present additional subtotals if the presentation of those subtotals is relevant to an understanding of the financial performance or financial position of the entity. So consequently, the ISB has proposed requirements for an entity for if they do decide to present additional subtotals, and those are set out on the slide here. So the subtotal must be recognised and measured in accordance with IFRS. It must be presented and labelled to make the subtotal understandable. It should be consistent from period to period. And for the statement of comprehensive income, it should not be displayed with more prominence than specifically required subtotals and totals. In addition, for the statement of comprehensive income, the ISB has proposed that any additional subtotals presented shall be reconciled to subtotals required by IFRS by presenting each excluded item in the statements of profit or loss and other comprehensive income. And so we think that the potential impact of this proposal is that there'll be a clearer use of relevant subtotals. Moving on to slide 9, and slide 9 and 10 both cover amendments regarding materiality. And as Christy said earlier, materiality is one of the problems that we have heard with disclosure, and we do have the other project researching materiality more broadly. But we have heard some other potential misconceptions about the materiality requirements in IS1, which we propose to address in these amendments. So we'd heard that some people think that materiality only applies to the primary financial statements. So if it's not material in the primary financial statements, it must be disclosed in the notes. Also, we'd heard that some people think that materiality doesn't apply if IFRS specifies a disclosure. So for example, we'd heard about IFRS 2 and share-based payments. So some people think that if there's a material share-based payment, all the disclosures in IFRS 2 are triggered. So the proposal in the exposure draft is to clarify that materiality applies to the whole of the financial statements, including the notes, and also to clarify that information from disclosures specified in IFRS should also be assessed for materiality. We think potential effect is that there'll be a reduction in the disclosure of irrelevant or immaterial information, and there could be more relevant information in financial statements. And slide 10 discusses further the materiality amendments. Another part problem that we've heard with disclosure is that there is too much relevant information or disclosure overload in the financial statements, and that the inclusion of that irrelevant information makes it difficult for users to understand what is important, and it's difficult to see the relevant information. So the proposal in the exposure draft is to require that entities shall not aggregate or disaggregate information in a manner which obscures the useful information. And so the potential effect is to increase the visibility of the material information. Slide 11 and the next of these specific amendments is about disaggregation of line items. So IAS1 specifies some line items for the statements of financial position and profit or loss and other comprehensive income. And we'd heard that some think that those specified line items cannot be disaggregated. Also, we'd heard that for the line items required for the statement of financial position, it's proceeded with words at a minimum, and some think that means they must be disclosed. So the proposed amendments clarified that specified line items can be disaggregated. In addition, the proposals remove the at a minimum wording for the statement of financial position paragraph. We think the potential effect will be that items will be there'll be better, more useful information because of the disaggregation of line items. Moving on to the last of the specific amendments, and this is about accounting policies. As part of the materiality work, we will be looking more into significant accounting policies, but we thought that we'd heard that there are some examples in IS1 which some people think makes it difficult to argue that an accounting policy is not significant. And these were the income taxes example and the foreign exchange example. So, for example, for the income taxes, we thought that people were saying that makes it difficult to argue an accounting policy is not significant because income taxes will be applicable to nearly all corporate entities at some point in their life, and that the income taxes standard provides no choice to the entity for its application. So the proposal in the exposure draft is to remove the income taxes and foreign exchange examples from IAS1. And so we think the potential effect is to reduce the ambiguity about what a significant accounting policy is, hopefully leading to a reduction of irrelevant accounting policies and financial statements. But we do understand that further work needs to be undertaken in that area, which will be undertaking the materiality project. That takes us to the end of the specific amendments proposed. Just to sum up, the comment letter deadline for this exposure draft is the 23rd of July, and the re-deliberations will be restarting in quarter three of this year, with an aim to finalise the amendments by the end of this year. And on this slide 13, we've included some links to where you can find more information about the disclosure initiative and also the amendments to IS1 project. So I think that brings us to questions. And just as a reminder, you can continue to submit questions at this point in the box on the left.
So Amy, I'll start with some questions. And when I start with one, which is actually about the disclosure initiative more broadly, which is whether the disclosure initiative is on the ISB's active agenda. And I think this is where looking at the disclosure initiative as a number of projects, it can sometimes get a little bit confusing. But if I went back to, say, slide five, for example, you can see that we've split there some of the projects which are at an implementation phase, and you'll see that actually those will be on what I think you would have thought was the active agenda list. And then we have others which are actually on our research agenda. But we would hope that as we develop and we get some, if we see some strategic or narrow focus amendments we can make, and we identify those in the research project, we would push things through into the implementation phase. One thing that we have been hearing is that people do want sort of results and some tangible benefits more quickly than not. That's not to say that they don't want us to do the sort of the work needed to get a good proposal, but we do feel that this disclosure problem, there is a sense there is a disclosure problem, and the sooner that we can do things to address that, that would be good. So in terms of whether, just to recap, whether this is on the active agenda, some of it is the implementation project, the IS1 amendments we've just been discussing, and we expect that the reconciliation of liabilities from financing activities project will move to an ED after, you know, depending on the board decision, and then hopefully we'll get something, an ED out on that in this year, so in quarter four, and the remainder is on the research. And we have the stuff that's also ongoing, which is actually not on any agenda, which we're just doing internally.
We've had another question here about, will these amendments reduce disclosures? So just to clarify, the goal of the disclosure initiative isn't just focusing on disclosure overload, it's also looking at improving the quality of the disclosures in the financial statements, so looking at the communication and increasing relevant information. Some of these amendments could lead to a reduction in disclosure. For example, the significant accounting policies amendment could lead to a reduction in boilerplate or unhelpful accounting policy disclosures. Also, the amendments about materiality obviously also highlight about the potentially harmful effect of including irrelevant information. However, as I said, the disclosure initiative isn't just about overload, and these amendments to IS1 are about ensuring an entity is able to use judgment when preparing financial statements. So it could lead to a reduction, but it's about quality.
Thanks, Amy. We've had a couple of questions about significant accounting policies, and I think the theme running through those is ultimately what is a significant accounting policy. For example, one person asking a question has said that is the removal of the taxes and forex examples, do they imply that policies that where there is no choice in the standard would not be considered significant and therefore do not need to be disclosed? And I think it's a good point because it sort of highlights that I don't think IFRS is particularly clear about what a significant accounting policy is, and that even when we're having the debate with the board as to whether we should remove those examples from IS1, there were different views around the table about what a significant accounting policy is. There did seem to be, I think, a sense that if there was an accounting policy choice in a standard, it would be a significant accounting policy. But I don't think we went as far as to preclude anything that didn't have a choice not being a significant accounting policy either. And that really sort of forms the basis of the additional work that we have said that we would undertake and we feel we do need them to undertake about what a significant accounting policy is. So, for example, it could be, as I said, where there's a choice under IFRS, where there's been a change and where there's been significant judgment are possible things that we've heard, but we need to explore that further. I think with the examples that we had, that we did take out of IS1, so the taxes and the Forex, it was difficult for us to actually pinpoint or get consensus about what about those accounting policies made them significant. And in order to avoid that confusion, we thought it was better to take them out and then to concentrate on giving more clarity in a separate project.
I've had another question in about materiality, and they're highlighting that materiality is essential in order to apply IS1. And they're just asking when and how we're planning to issue guidance on materiality. Otherwise, we'll still have divergence between preparers, auditors, and enforcers. So the materiality, we've got the amendments to IS1, which is clarifying those potential misconceptions about materiality. As I said, we're going back for re-deliberations in quarter three this year with an aim to publish final amendments by quarter four. Regarding the other materiality project, which is researching the application of materiality, the aim is to come back in quarter three with the summary of the research, as Christy said, potentially publish a research paper. And at that stage, we'd have to ask the ISB and consider what the potential other next steps could be. It could be that the research paper is adequate, or it could be that further guidance or further work needs to be undertaken on that.
Just another question, and again on the materiality theme, and it's asking, having a sense that specific standards have priority in application and over IS1. So if you have a specific disclosure requirement in standards, that would override the materiality provisions in IS1. And this question is asking, commenting that IS1 amendments change that relationship, and will that create further confusion, and how do you ensure that regulators keep an eye on the overall requirement in IS1 to apply materiality, even if there is a specific disclosure requirement in the standard? And I think my response to that is that actually the board, and that sort of reflected in the proposals in the amendments to IS1, did not feel that there was a priority of a specific disclosure requirement in the standard over the IS1 materiality provision. So in their view, the IS1 guidance on materiality was applicable across all standards, and a specific disclosure requirement in a standard was always subject to that materiality decision, and hence why they felt that the proposals that we're making in IS1 were clarifying rather than particularly changing what they felt IS1 was doing. But, you know, it's obviously clear that there has been an issue there, and from what the ISB's perspective was a misconception. So I think in terms of would it create further confusion, we hope that by streamlining the sense that the materiality judgment in IS1 is of a central focus and is standardised application across all standards, I hope that would actually decrease the confusion that has previously been in existence. And in terms of regulators, I think, like all our guidance, we do need to not only communicate and educate to preparers and to auditors, but I think we have to also make sure that we educate and communicate well to regulators. So we're hoping these proposals will make that clearer for regulators to be able to interpret. We've got time.
Christy. We've had a question in. If a required line item is disaggregated on the financial statements, will it still be necessary to provide a total of the breakdown to satisfy the requirement in IS1 in relation to that required line item? So they've given the example, if revenue is broken down, do you still need to show the total revenue on the face?
I think it's whether you think that total provides relevant information. I think, what we tried to say is that you could break that line item down that's required into two elements if you felt that gave better information. So I don't think it's necessary to have that total, because that's in effect what this guidance is showing, but I do think it should be clear that if somebody wanted to calculate that total, they could do so. So that would be my response to that question. I think I'm just looking at the time. I hope we have covered most of the questions, or at least the themes from the questions. I want to thank you for dialing in, and I want to encourage you to review the proposals in the exposure draft and to respond as necessary. And as Amy said, there's a lot of information on our website, so do feel free to look at that. And I think there's even a queries section there, so you can come back at any time. So thank you again.
Thanks.